the world tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. This is Garner Ted Armstrong with the good news of the world tomorrow. A writer wrote into a newspaper column, "The mystery of the divine plan of the universe can't be known to any of us. Why one child is taken away and another is left to flourish cannot be the subject of fruitful speculation." A little boy wrote and asked, "Why was my brother allowed to be struck by an automobile?" A soldier in Vietnam wants to know why his buddy is killed. An elderly lady wants to know why her husband is taken away when he's never hurt anybody and he's, as she says, an innocent bystander. Perhaps he dies of some disease that she feels didn't even come upon him as a result of anything he did. You know, 10% of Americans have been shown to be, by actual statistical survey, tired of living. You've heard the old question, what's the matter? You tired of living? Well, you know, today people are answering, yes, I am. The feeling that life is not worth living will visit at least 10% of all Americans, according to a Baltimore psychiatrist. In fact, it's the most challenging problem that confronts the modern physician, said Dr. Frantz J. Hyatt, Jr., chief of psychiatry at the Franklin Square Hospital in Baltimore. He said that of all the psychiatric ills to which man is heir, depression occurs with the greatest frequency. So people want to know why. Why train wrecks and automobile accidents and plane crashes and the death of loved ones? Why accidents? And along with asking why, they also want to say, well, now, in a world such as this is, of all the dog-eat-dog competition, of the international strife and the racial tensions and all the dishonesty and the admitted cheating and lying and fiddling and stealing on the part of executives and people even high up in government, all the government scandal and the rest of it, how can I have any faith in God? People want to know, well, could God exist when all the accidents continue to occur? Have you ever wondered about that? Why, if there is a God, does he allow terrible airplane disasters? Why train wrecks? Why sudden storms that take lives? Why all the automobile collisions? Why muscular dystrophy? And why leukemia? Why cancer? Here's a letter from a little boy called Peter. He wrote to Abby, a nationally known newspaper advice counselor, and he said, "Dear Abby, my Sunday school teacher says that God is everywhere." So he figured if Abby would just print this letter, God would be sure to see it. So Peter wrote God a letter, and he said, "Dear God, why did you let my brother die? When he was hit by the car, my mother prayed to you to let him live, but you wouldn't. My little brother was only 2 years old, and he couldn't have sinned so bad that you had to punish him that way. Everyone says that you're good and can do anything you want to do. You could have saved my little brother, but you let him die. You broke my mother's heart. How can I love you?" Signed, Peter. Now, you know, that's a pretty tough question to answer, isn't it? But Abby did fairly well. She put down this answer about as well as anybody could do, I imagine, under the circumstances. Said, "Your question is one that has troubled religious men for thousands of years." In other words, the first thing you do is to say, "Well, that's a good question." Then went on to say, "One great thinker wrote a book about it. It's called Job, and it's part of the Bible. It says that the suffering of innocent people is something we cannot understand. But this much is sure, death is not a punishment. It is one of life's mysteries. Speak to your minister, Peter. Communicate with God by praying. He will help you in your search for wisdom and goodness and help make your mommy happy again." So this young boy was advised to communicate with his minister, to get in touch with his minister and find out if he could explain it. Well, when you find out whether or not ministers can explain it, maybe a good source to go would be to a nationally known columnist. He's read around the world for that matter and certainly been quoted a good bit over this program because of what he said about that field in particular. The following article was written by a nationally read religious column writer named Lewis Castles, and it's about the hardest question that a minister ever has to face. This very question, why does God allow death? Why did God let this happen? Why did God allow that? It's the hardest question, said Lewis Castles, a minister ever has to face. Why did God let this happen? Now, that this to which he refers could be the death of a child. It could be the lingering agony of a cancer patient. It could be people trapped in a burning hotel. It could be the capricious destruction of a tornado or the mute suffering of an animal, for that matter. It could be the wanton act of a depraved
criminal or the proved blowing up of an airliner. People want to know why. Any kind of tragedy which arouses human pity, people say, why did God let that happen? And you know, as this columnist went on to say, the inability to find a satisfactory answer to the great why is the chief cause of religious doubt. Millions of people have become de facto atheists, to borrow a term from the current news about racial segregation and so on. They're de facto atheists. They're practicing atheists, practical atheists, if not professing atheists, because they have lost all faith in any God. They don't pray to a God. They don't look to any God to guide them in their lives, and they sort of turn their nose up to suggesting there might be a God. Yet they may have a religion. There may be some church affiliation one way or the other. You know why? Well, because a lot of people are finding it impossible to believe in a loving and omnipotent God who created a world in which people see so much pain and suffering. Now, believers wrestle with the problem. What's the answer? Well, Lewis Castle summarized it this way. How do they reconcile the indisputable fact of evil with the assertion that God is good and all-powerful? He said, any attempt to compress the volumes written on this subject into a newspaper column is foredoomed to failure. Glib and oversimplified answers are worse than none at all to those who love the truth and whose love for truth has led to honest doubt. Now, a noted atheist, Joseph Lewis, in a book called The Age of Reason, said, if there is a God, why didn't he give man in the ages past the knowledge so necessary to his existence? And he said, if he had the power to refashion the universe, listen to this because it's at the core of the whole question, to remake it over, to just create the world nearer to his heart's desire, he said there would be no blind, no deaf, no dumb, there would be no crippled, and each child born would live free of disease and possess a mentality capable enough to withstand all the rebuffs of life. There would be no deaths by accident. There would be no earthquakes, cyclones, or tornadoes. And he said, unless and until such a condition comes to pass, when men may live free from disease, sorrow, and suffering, there is no God, the way he figured, in this universe worthy of our homage. How would you answer these questions? Probably you wouldn't, because they're just about beyond most people. But you know, there is a very obvious, positive, concrete answer to why suffering, why accidents, why chance, why caprice, why disaster, collision, sicknesses, weather. We can philosophize all day long, but that's not going to get us anywhere. The question is, how do you prove it one way or the other? There is a God, and you can demonstrate it scientifically. And there is an answer in the revealed word of that God about all of these whys. Why does God allow it? Now, do you know that the proof of God is right at the very basis to this question? That actually it proves God exists more than any other single thing? People believe that because they can't believe in people, they can't believe in God. Well, actually, that's one of the major reasons why they should. If you look into it for yourself, you need to write for these booklets, Does God Exist? And the proof of the Bible. That's the place to begin. Find out, first of all, is there any way to substantiate Bible claims? Is there any way to prove the Bible is the Word of God, that there is a divine, all-wise Creator God who claims He is good, that He is love, He is the complete epitome of all that is mercy, long-suffering, selflessness, justice, equity, all of the qualities of good? Not that God is a sort of a blind force of good, not that God is some fancy good inside of human nature, but that God is an individual, a person, a being, that he lives in a certain place, he is an actual, tangible personality, that he is a creator, and that he has not left man without a guide, that he has not left man without a word. Now, Joseph Lewis said, why is it that God left us that knowledge, or left us without it? Why didn't he give man in the ages past the knowledge so necessary to his existence? Well, he did. And that knowledge is available to you. You can prove it to yourself whether or not it's true. Every single accident, every sickness, has a causative factor. Somebody did it. Causes of air crashes, whether they are chance, whether it's slipshod workmanship, poor maintenance, in other words, an equipment failure, maybe it's the pilot, maybe it's somebody that's on the crew, maybe it's something that happened aboard that flight that we'll never know about. In one very sensational case of years back, it was proved, finally, that someone had planted a bomb aboard an airplane. and many, many innocent lives. That is, innocent meaning people who did not want to die, who didn't plan their death, and who had no direct part in planning their death at that time for that cause and reason. When you use the term innocent, let's use it correctly, because God talks about who is innocent and who isn't innocent in the Bible based upon a different set of standards. But we mean innocent of causing their death at that time, in that place, and under those conditions when they didn't want to die. But somebody was sure guilty. Somebody, in this case, went to, I don't know if they hug him or put him in the gas chamber or the electric chair, but I know they apprehended the fellow. Now, he was guilty of killing other people. Now, how could that be? Why did God permit that? All right, let's go back to something else. What about an automobile accident? What causes an automobile wreck? Any number of things could. We say weather causes it. No, weather doesn't cause automobile wrecks. People are driving cars. People cause automobile accidents. They're driving along at a certain speed. It starts to rain. They don't reduce their speed. They're driving along in a snowstorm, and or it says ice on the road, and instead of altering their management of that automobile to meet those conditions, sometimes accidents occur. Or maybe they stop by for a couple for the road. And all those factors play on why accidents occur. But the point is, those people who didn't stop by for the short one on the way home, or the people who did slow down, are sometimes run into by the one who didn't. Somebody causes the wreck. There's always a causative factor. And in turn, this affects other people. Now, a person did it. A human being ran over this boy's little brother. Somebody caused the plane crash or the train wreck. Who was it? But you know, people reason that there is a God. He allows man to commit crimes. He allows man, in other words, to be capable of sloppy workmanship, to err, to make a mistake. And those mistakes can hurt or even kill other human beings who did not make that precise mistake, at least at that time. So let's understand that mankind was created and put on this earth a human, free, moral agent. This man who said he would remake the world closer to his own design said there would be no blind, no deaf, no dumb, no crippled, no accidents. He meant to say, therefore, we will all be living in a complete padded cell, a giant cosmic womb, so to speak, where there would be absolutely no possibility of accident, no mistakes. Nobody could be capable of shaving the overhead and trying to enlarge on the profits by hiring unqualified employees, or maybe putting in materials that are not good, or following wrong methods in producing a certain commodity. Nobody would be capable anymore of thinking only design and forgetting the safety measures. Nobody would be capable of making mistakes. You know what you would have? A world full of psychopaths. A world of insane individuals. It would be like you would be living in a world where you grow up, and instead of air, all around you is a sort of an invisible electric-like or magnetic-like force. As a little tiny child, you first try to crawl toward maybe a grate on the floor, which is too hot. And instead of your parents saying no and picking you up and turning you the other way, and then if you repeat it, maybe swatting you a few times to give you a little tiny bit of pain so you don't get a much more serious pain, you would try to crawl toward it, and suddenly there would be this invisible but this irresistible force, and you couldn't crawl through it. You can't see anything, but there's some kind of a force, like magnetism in reverse, if you've ever played as a boy with magnets, or as a little child, and you switch the poles, and instead of attracting each other, they repel. Kind of like some personalities, you know. And there's you can't see it, an invisible force, and it's actually pushing, and you can look, there's nothing in between it, but somehow the lineup of the molecules in those things are such that there's an invisible force there. This also, incidentally, needs to be explained. Who made it? What keeps it going? So this little boy or little girl would be crawling toward the grate, and this invisible force would hold him back. And he'd keep trying to crawl, and he'd keep trying to crawl, and he'd keep pushing him back. And he'd begin to scream and sit, and pretty soon he would ball up his fist and begin to pummel the floor and kick and throw an absolute tantrum. All right, so maybe he learns gradually that he can't resist this force. But the older he gets, the more frustrated he becomes. Now he's a teenager, let's assume. And he's out with his girl. And he decides to stop the long lover's lane. And he just barely reaches over for his girl when this invisible force, here it is again, oh boy, here we go again. The invisible force stops him. His hand reaches for the girl and it can't go any further.
She reaches for him. They both got this grave, lusty look of desire on their faces, and all of a sudden, here's this horrible frustration. This invisible force won't let them reach for each other. They can't even pucker up. Nothing happens. They're completely defeated. They break out in angry tears and frustration. Now, they would like to kick something, but the invisible force won't let them. They would like to curse, but their mouth is stopped. Wouldn't that be a world to live in? Here's a guy, anciently, who was able to express himself by ripping his clothes to bits. You're reading the Old Testament about people who, when a terrible disaster occurred, when bad news came, or when they were really humiliated, or maybe they really repented before God, and they got brokenhearted about their own actions and deeds, and they would shred their clothes. They would rip their clothes to shreds. But that is destroying good merchandise. And so the invisible force won't let them do it. Now, you talk about a group of psychopaths, people would go completely insane. And this, my friends, is what you would have to do to people if you were going to prevent people from doing that which is bad for them and which may result in the innocent suffering along with them. There would have to be some kind of an invisible restraint that is absolutely enforced upon people where they could not make the kind of a mistake that is going to hurt somebody else. Now, kids reason, if they're in the car in Lover's Lane, that this won't hurt anybody else. Oh, yes, it will. It'll hurt several moms and dads and uncles and aunts and school chums and several teachers that might have been trying to instill some right citizenship and good moral standards in these kids. And it'll hurt their child if they have one illegitimately. And it'll hurt a lot of other people for generations because that child will bear the stamp and the mark for the rest of his days. And so will his children and his children's children. And it hurts all society generally because it's one more step down on the wrong road toward the wrong results and the wrong outcome and the wrong way of living. So now let's go back to the question. What about this falling plane trailing dense smoke and a ball of fire? Is somebody going to blame God for that? He didn't make the plane. He didn't buy the tickets. He created the laws. Somehow, somewhere, somebody disobeyed a law. Who was it? Some designers who thought money instead of safety? I don't know. I haven't the faintest idea. A pilot who'd had one too many or had one at all? I don't know. Maybe nobody else will ever find out. Somebody on board the plane who had a gun and shot through the roof or something, or the overhead compartment? I don't know. But something happened. There was a breaking of a law, because there are laws that make airplanes fly. And as long as those laws are obeyed, nobody gets hurt. There are millions upon millions of people traveling millions of passenger miles every year with absolute safety. And in spite of the sensational sort of a report attached to airline crashes, statistically, you can absolutely prove you are safer in a jet, this is by FAA statistics, than you are in your automobile. And you are safer in a twin-engine aircraft than you are in a big jet aircraft. This is by dividing the number of passenger miles flown into the number of deaths that occur. And, of course, there are a lot of variable qualities, of course, to those statistics. In other words, jets get there so much faster. The number of hours on board might mean a whole lot more miles covered. So it's a matter of the hours as well as the miles. But, you know, somebody made a mistake. Now, let's go back to this. What about the revealed word of God? What does it say about human beings? Well, it reveals exactly what we know to be true, that there is evil in human nature. But people look around and they see evil in other people. They say, how can I believe in God? What are we talking about? The Bible shows human beings are evil. It shows human nature for what it is. It says somebody is going to try to get the best of his neighbor. It talks about somebody losing his sense of equilibrium and going practically insane with hatred, jealousy, lust, resentment, greed. It talks about a root of bitterness. It talks about people being so vengeful they want to kill a lot of other people before they kill themselves. It describes rampant, unbridled, resentful, bestial human nature and shows we human beings are the only creatures that are capable of that kind of action. A dog doesn't sin. He may bite somebody, but that's not a sin. That's his nature, and we all know it. A human being, human beings can bite. You know, they've been known to bite. It's like the headline, man bites dog. That always gets attention if somebody ever pulls that one. Human beings can do practically anything. Well, not practically, they can, so far as an evil act is concerned. Now let's just get to the core of the whole question. Why do people ask, why does God let it happen?
I'll tell you why. Because somehow everyone has begun to assume this is God's world. They assume God is engaged in a great struggle against the forces of evil. They assume that since God is good, that God is the author of everything that is good and right, and that anything that is evil and bad must be, therefore, going contrary to the way God is desperately trying to make it go. They think God is trying to preserve the innocent, trying to prevent accidents, that God is the great sleuth who is stopping murder, sickness, wars, and famines, that God is out to save and protect the innocent. Absolutely not. The Bible doesn't say that. Jesus said, here's one of the most remarkable scriptures in all of the Bible. It's in Matthew 10 and verse 34, where Jesus Christ of Nazareth said, and he's called the Prince of Peace, remember, but he said, think not I am come to bring peace. I did not come to bring peace, but a sword. Now, you'll have to read all of that in context to get exactly what he meant. He was talking a little later about religious persecution. And incidentally, so long as I brought up the subject, do you know that just about as many people have died in the course of wars and by the sword and by torture and by burnings at the stake and impalings and everything else that is horrible and bestial and brutal as a direct result of religious persecution than for any other cause? Well, you read that statement of Christ and you know he meant what he said. Sometimes somebody begins to believe and obey the Bible, and it makes his relatives insanely mad. I don't understand, except that, well, I do in the sense that I understand human nature, but I mean, you ask me why, you figure it out. Why do people act like ravening beasts because somebody believes differently than they do? Because that's part of human nature. Because somehow that casts a light of incrimination. It sort of nags at our guilt complex and makes us think, well, now wait just a minute. Maybe by his good deeds, he's trying to claim my bad deeds are wrong. And that makes me mad because I want to justify my bad deeds. So I'm mad at him because of his good deeds. It's ridiculous, but that's the way human beings reason. They don't even drag it out in the light of day and reason that way tangibly. They don't write letters about it or admit it over the air, but that's the way human beings react. Now, the Bible is an instruction book that gives you the overall program that Almighty God, the Creator, is working out here below. Evolutionists claim that evolution is still going on. You know, they got a little bit of a point there. Creation is still going on, but evolution is not true, and I can prove that statement. Creation is true, but creation was not finished in the Garden of Eden. It's still going on, and God is working on his supreme masterpiece of all time, which is perfect, flawless character. Not only the ability to always perceive the right, but the tremendous, masterful willpower to make the self irrevocably, unalterably, always do that which is right instead of what you want to do. Now, of course, if people were living that way today, there wouldn't be accidents, and little Timmy and his brother wouldn't be worried about a death. Oh, you'd worry, but I mean, there wouldn't be any death. And you wouldn't hear of all of the tragedy. You wouldn't hear about airplane disasters and weather disasters and automobile wrecks and train wrecks and sickness and disease and flu bugs and pneumonia and leukemia and lung cancer. Now, somebody gets lung cancer. His relative said, oh, why did he die? Why did God allow it? Well, what was God going to do? Have that irresistible force every time he tried to light up? Make him eat a cigarette and get so sick he couldn't stand it instead of smoking it? What was he going to do? You know, if you were to take away from people all that people want to do, which is going to kick back on them, it would so frustrate them they wouldn't know what to do. Unless they were given a measure of the Spirit of God, which can only come voluntarily, and they began to realize you can have a lot more fun by obeying laws and not getting kickbacks, that you can have a lot more excitement and fun and enthusiasm in life, a lot more thrills, and not the wrong kind. A lot more depth of satisfaction, a lot more sense of fulfillment by living the way God meant man to live, which is free from disease, free from financial debacle, and free from the terror and fear of war, and free from natural calamities and disaster, and free from all kinds of horrible moral consequences. Free from his headaches and his night sweats and his worries and his sicknesses and his diseases and his death.
Now, the only way you're going to make men do that is to interfere in what men are doing. There's a great purpose being worked out here below. It's going to take approximately 6,000 years for man to learn that lesson, and you know, by any way of reckoning it, we're just about the end of that period of time of recorded history. Now, that overall purpose is not going to be believed just because I say so, and I'm not going to change humanity's direction. I'm not even going to change the direction of one county or one city, and don't pretend to. And I can't even change your private direction, but you can, and that's the whole point. You're a free moral agent. You can prevent your accidents, and you can try your best to avoid suffering the consequences of the accidents of others. And you yourself can begin to live by the rules and the regulations that are going to reap the greatest benefits and the rewards in your own life. Sickness, heartache, disease, financial trouble, poverty, in other words, these are all the result of direct causes, broken laws. It's about time you found out what those laws are. Is there a great God who stands back of them? Is there a great sustainer of law? Is there a great lawgiver, a life giver, a designer, a sustainer of force and energy who makes this world go round, who put man upon it for a great purpose we need to learn in our own lives? Write for these booklets, Does God Exist? The Proof of the Bible. Write for the booklet on the Ten Commandments that takes every one of the ten major laws. You've heard about them all your life. You may never have read them just the way they are, and you may never have seen them magnified and expounded in the Bible, and you may not have known that they are up to date, that they apply today in the business world. And I don't care where you live, whether you live in South Africa or Australia or Great Britain. It's time in this world of ours that is fraught with disaster and with the threat of great military and political upheaval to really understand what is our private purpose in living and where are we personally headed. Write for that booklet, The Ten Commandments. It's free of charge. There's no price for it. And if you want to see how to apply the laws of life to your children, and to give them the right kind of instruction, and the right kind of instruction about safety and how to handle themselves, then write for this booklet on the plain truth about child rearing, and find out that love and punishment can come from the same source. The plain truth about child rearing, that's free of charge. Write for the booklets on Does God Exist? And the Proof of the Bible. And above all things, get your name on the mailing list of the Plain Truth magazine. And remember to write in for your first sample copy of the Bible Correspondence Course. It begins with the question, why study the Bible in the space age? Is the Bible relevant? Is it up to date? Does the Bible, as I've been saying, really talk about modern day problems? Does it talk about the future? Does it talk about what's around the corner in world affairs in these 60s and on into the early 70s of the most perplexing, frightening times in the recollection or the history of man? Yes, it does. And this Bible Correspondence Course begins with that question, why study the Bible in the space age? And makes it clear. And it's illustrated, and it's free of charge. There is no tuition. There's no charge, no price, no follow-up. No one's going to call on you for any of the literature I've mentioned. Request the Plain Truth magazine. Request this booklet on the United States and the British Commonwealth in prophecy. Find out where we are mentioned in the prophecies of the Bible. And then keep listening to every single World Tomorrow program and tell other people about it. Now, all you need to do is to write to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California. The address is Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California. Remember, the booklets are Does God Exist?, The Proof of the Bible, The United States and the British Commonwealth in Prophecy, and Why Were You Born? The address again in just a moment. Remember, all this literature is absolutely free of charge. There is no price for it, no follow-up. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. And so until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.